And a couple weeks ago, someone sent me an article. They said, hey, you're doing this series. This article sounds like it would fit. And here's the name of the article. Man Seeks Restraining Order Against God. This is a true story. So like a month ago in Israel, this man went to the magistrate court and he said, I want to put out a restraining order against God. I want you to keep God away from me because whenever he's been around me, he's been very unkind to me. That's the appeal. Now, the article didn't mention whether the defendant showed up in court or not. It says, you know, he didn't show up. We don't know. I think maybe he was there and he was exercising his right to remain silent. Who knows? But the judge came along and his decision was this. He goes, I deny this request because while I agree and assert that you do need help, it's not help the court can give you. And I thought about this man, and I don't really know what's motivating him. I don't know if it was kind of a lark or if it was something he was just kind of acting out. But I wonder, can you identify somewhat with this guy? Maybe you look at the cards you've been dealt and you think, I would like a new dealer. If God holds the times in his hands, and this is the way he's going to do it, then just hold him away from me. See, we're in this section of Ecclesiastes here, chapters 3 through 5. Remember, this is a memoir written by Solomon, one of the wisest and wealthiest, most powerful men who ever lived, who devoted his life and his funds and resources to asking some of the bigger questions of life. And recently in this section, he came out in chapter 3 and he said, the times are in his hands. But when we actually look at the times and we see how unfair life is and we see that people die and we see the cruelty of the powerful, we struggle to trust in that. One thing I want to help us remember is that while God created a world, we're not living in the world God created. We're living in a broken, twisted, sin-filled version of that. This is not the way God wanted it to be. And the hope we have, the hope that we're holding on to in Christ, is that he is working all things together to reconcile things to himself. That one day we're going to get to experience fully what it means to live in a world the way God intended. And I have this dream that someday we're going to be face to face with God and God's going to go, this is what it was. This is what it's always been about. It's called the kingdom and we're moving towards that. But still, while it's today, it's difficult to live in the tension between the hope that we have and the reality that we see. And this is what Solomon is doing well for us. I love that he's not sugarcoating either one. He's holding tightly to the hope of a hand that's coming down from above, as well as he's holding to the reality of things that he sees, and he's just trying to make sense of it. So this is what happens. When we don't trust that God is doing a good job with the times that are in his hands, we're tempted to take matters into our own. This is a big struggle for me because often I feel like God is not doing what I think he should. He's not moving like he should. He's not moving as fast as he should. Sometimes he's slow. Sometimes it seems like he's forgotten. Sometimes he's not acting on things. And so I think I'm going to help him out. I'm going to take matters in my own hands. What does that look like? What's the danger of that? Well, Solomon in chapter 5 today, what we're going to do is we're going to look at three different ways that we tend to take matters into our own hands when we don't trust God. And then we're going to have a break and reflect on that. And we're going to come back and identify with Solomon. So what is an alternative? That's where we're going to go today. You good? You ready? Okay. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verse 1. The first temptation when we're not really seeing God do what we want is that we begin to trust my words over his words. I start to put more stock in what I have to say than what he has said. Now, this plays out generally in the kind of thinking that says, well, the more that I pray or the more promises I make, the more likely it is that God's going to do what I want. If I just prayed enough or if I just promised enough, then God would say, all right, and he'd give me what I want. Solomon gives us this good advice. He says, when you go to the house of God, when you go to meet with God, when you go to pray, when you go to talk to him, guard your steps. To draw near to listen to God is better than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they don't even know that they are doing evil. When you and I disagree with God, and we're going to go talk to him about it, that's good, right? Instead of just, we go to God to talk. What is the attitude? How are our steps towards him? Are we coming to listen, to draw near to listen? Or are we coming to lecture him? Are we coming to receive from him, or are we coming to offer the sacrifice of fools? When you see the word sacrifice, generally in the Old Testament, it just means worship. You could replace the word worship. So he's talking about the worship of fools. What is that? I think Solomon is saying it's better to come to God ready to listen than to always come ready to talk. It's better to come to God and say, God, could you share with me instead of, all right, here's the list of things I need. And maybe saying things to God without ever taking time to hear from God is a way of doing evil. It's a worship of fools. This is one reason why we try to take a couple minutes in every one of our services and we just stop and we play some music. We allow you to listen to God instead of us always talking. Solomon says, be not rash with your mouth, nor let your heart be hasty to utter a word before God. For God is in heaven and you are where? On earth, okay. Therefore, let your words, what? Be few. Now, many of you have probably thought in your life, I would love to go to get some theological education, maybe a Bible school or a seminary. I would like to offer you something. I'm going to save you an entire year of study. I'm going to give you 2 points of theology that are going to save you thousands of dollars, hours of study. I'm going to boil it down for you right now. You ready? It comes from this verse. Here is what Solomon is reminding us. Number one, there is a God. Number two, you are not him. You're welcome. There's an entire year of seminary. You could argue and wrestle and come to this conclusion. Solomon says, put the verse back up. Solomon says, God is in heaven and you are not. Therefore, watch the words that you use with him. Now, this doesn't mean we hold back our honesty. It means we hold back our demands. In fact, Solomon grew up reading all the songs that his father David read. And if you ever read the Psalms, you see a guy who just rips his heart open to God. There's nothing wrong with that. But as a king, Solomon has come to realize the limits of his power. This is a man who could order legions to battle and men would die willingly for him. This is a man who could look at a desert and say, I want a city to spring up there, and it would. And he says, with all that power, I haven't been very successful at bossing God around. Fools assume if I just say enough to God, he'll give in to what I want. I've shared with you before, it's a story that haunts me to this day. I was having a conversation years ago in Texas with this woman after a church service, and her husband had died of cancer after a long battle. I'll never forget, she said, I believe that if only I had prayed more, he would be alive. There's so much wrong with that statement. And the worst part is the hell, the prison this woman was walking around in, thinking that the times were in her hands. And if she had just prayed enough, I mean, who knows? Maybe she prayed 5,000 times, but in her mind, 5,001 was the kicker. And then God would give in. Solomon says, watch out about your hasty and rash words. What's an example of a hasty or rash word we might make to God? He says in the next verse, when you vow a vow to God, when you make a promise to God, don't delay paying it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you vow. One of the things we do sometimes when we're under the gun, we're under pressure, and we're talking to God, and we're trying to disagree about the times, is we are hasty and we rush to make promises. God, if you get me out of this jam, I will never do it again. That was my prayer every day of high school, basically. If you want to sum up my high school prayer life, it was, God, if you get me out of this, I won't do it again. If you bring her back, I promise I'll change. God, I'll do anything. I'll go there. I'll give this. I'll do this if you'll just do this. And in a moment of rashness and desperation, we make these kinds of promises to God. Solomon is warning us there's something wrong about negotiating with the Almighty. What is that? We'll see that in a minute. Let's just let that one lie there for a second. Let's come to a second temptation, though. There's a second temptation. When we don't trust that the times are in his hands, we begin to trust our rulers over his rule. Now, I know that this has no connection with America in 2016, but let's just kind of take a stab at it. We tend to put our hopes in people, in leaders. See, if God's not going to deliver what I want, then maybe the right thing is to elect the right person or to hire the right person. And if we could just get the right person, they will deliver the times for us that God seems not to be able to do. If you just do that, we'd be okay. But here's something that's probably true about every leader you've ever followed. Every leader at some point has failed to deliver what you wanted, to deliver the times that you wanted. And Solomon says, when that happens, when they fail us, we are amazed. Why? He says, if you see in a province, verse 8, a province, if you see in some area of jurisdiction, somewhere where there's a leader controlling or leading a group or an area, or so, if you see in this province the oppression of the poor, the violation of justice and righteousness, do not be what? Don't be amazed at the matter. And I've been thinking about this. Why would we be amazed when we see a leader fail us? I think it happens when we're putting our trust in that leader. We thought this leader would deliver the promises that we've been hoping for, and they didn't, and we're amazed. Solomon goes on and says, hey, I just want you to remember that the high official that has failed you is being watched over by another higher one, and there's yet higher ones over him. The guy taking advantage of you is probably being taken advantage of by another person. This is the way the world works. Solomon says, it's just the way power works. Every leader is going to fail at every level, and we can't put our trust in leaders to handle the times. What can we do instead? Let's move to this third temptation. We'll come back and address these in a second with Solomon. When we don't trust his hands, we tend to trust this. When we don't trust the times, we tend to trust what is in our hands more than we trust what is in his hands. We think the best way to face an uncertain future is with a full wallet or a bank account. I can protect myself from the times if I have planned ahead and if I have money. What we're doing, though, subtly is shifting our trust from what is in God's hands to what is in ours. And sometimes the more we have, and this is why Jesus talks so much about the rich. He goes, one of the challenges of the rich is they don't think they need God because they've got stuff in their hands. Now, it's good to be prepared. I'm not saying that's wrong. But I think Solomon is saying, if you think that wealth will protect you, you are in for a surprise. Why? First of all, verse 10, money's not going to protect us from unhappiness. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income, because this is always changing. I'll never forget when I was getting my first kind of full-time job, and I called my stepdad. I was like, hey, I don't even know what to ask for. Like, what's a salary? What's a good salary? I don't even know, you know, what this would look like. And I said, how much is enough? And I'll never forget, he said, just a little bit more. That's been true. Money can't provide that happiness. There's just a little bit more out there. Money won't protect us from problems. Listen, Solomon says, when your goods increase, they increase who eat them. What advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? How many of you have ever had that little fantasy about winning the lottery? Raise your hand. How many of you have done that? Okay. I don't know who's not raising your hand, but it's a safe place. You don't have to lie. Every person here has said, I would love to win the lottery. And we've maybe made little deals. Hey, Lord, if I won the lottery, I promise you, I'd give you 10%. So you come out ahead. And then I would do the rest of it so wisely. Solomon says, you think winning the lottery would solve your problems? First thing that happens when your goods increase, all your relatives come out of the woodwork. They want to eat it. Oh, and then the tax guy shows up and he's hungry too. The more you have, the more people want it. More money, more problems. Verse 12, he says, money won't protect us from worry. Sleep, sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much. He's worked hard all day. He goes to sleep. He's exhausted. But the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. He's up all night. His stomach is rumbling. He takes a bunch of antacids. He's drinking Metamucil or whatever you drink when you, not Metamucil. What's this stuff? Huh? Pepto-Bismol, yeah. He may be drinking Metamucil for other. That's the end of Ecclesiastes. He's drinking Pepto-Bismol because his stomach hurts because he's worried about all his stuff. All his wealth has caused him to worry. He just lies awake at night just worried about all my stuff. I apologize, Lord, for that. But here's the thing. Money won't protect our future. And this is the thing. We think the times, okay, God, you're not doing a good job of the times. I'll tell you what, I'm going to protect my times. Solomon says, I'm going to tell you about a grievous evil. Wow. Those are big words. I've seen it under the sun. Riches were kept to an owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. He's the father of the son, has nothing in his hand. Solomon says, I knew this guy. He saved every dime, never spent a bit of it, always talking about the future. He was going to provide a college education for his kids. He was going to pay off his home. He was going to make sure his retirement was set. He did every single thing for this future day to protect himself, and one day the stock market crashed and he lost it all. He didn't even have a dime to give to his son. And Solomon says, that's grievous. Years ago, a family member came to me with a can't-miss investment opportunity. It was a surefire business startup, and it was such a good deal, and I looked at this. We prayed about it. We thought we were doing a good thing, so we went to our retirement account and took money out and invested it in this. 2 years later, the can't-miss business missed, and the surefire opportunity misfired. It was a bad venture. We lost 100% of what we invested in that. We're still recovering from that. It was a bad venture. But see, that's something I did, and you could look at it and go, oh, but Thomas, you know, I'm much smarter than you. I would have made these kind of principles. I wouldn't have done that. Yeah, there was another time around 2008 where I had been working for 10 or 15 years to build up my retirement, and the market changed. Remember that? It kind of crashed, and the bubble hit, and all of a sudden, my retirement fund had cut by almost 40%. Beyond my control, lost it all. I want to encourage you. You and I ought to buy insurance. We ought to think about the future. Of course, put money in savings, accounts, all that stuff. But if we think this will protect me instead of he will protect me, we're in for fooling ourselves. Solomon says this is a very famous phrase, and here's where it comes from. As this man came from his mother's womb, he shall go again naked as he came. He shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. There's no U-Hauls attached to hearses. This is also a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness, much vexation, sickness, and anger. If he's only working for himself, he's going to be sad. If you trust what is in your hands, what do you do when your hands are empty? Let's pause here for a moment, and I want to invite Kevin up, and we're going to take a moment to reflect with God. Let me give you something to think about as we meditate on these. Where is it that you tend to take the times into your hands? Does it have something to do with promises or things that you try to negotiate with God? Maybe it happens where you put your trust in a pastor or a leader or someone and you think that's going to be the key. Or perhaps it is something to do with money or possessions. Or if I just had this, I'd be secure. Let me give you a moment to reflect with God and we'll come back and revisit with Solomon. Well, we cannot control the times. And I think what Solomon's reminding us today is we can't even control the one who controls the times. This leads us to beginning to trust our words more than God's. We start to think, make promises and negotiate. That leads us to trust our rulers instead of God's rule. We think we get the right person, we'll be okay. And it leads us to trust what's in our hands over what is in His. We will provide for ourselves. And look, I get that there's a place to do all those things. There's a place for persistence in prayer. There's a place for all these things. But I think what Solomon's getting at is these are temptations to trust this instead of Him. How do we react to that? Well, let's walk back through these. When we are tempted to trust our words over God's words, Solomon says we should let our words be few, and we should guard our steps. When we trust God's words more than our words, our prayers begin to change. They become less rash and less wordy. They become shorter and more deliberate. Here's a crazy thought. What if the more spiritually mature you became, the shorter your prayers became? Wouldn't you think that would be opposite? You would think, well, no, the more I become spiritually wise and mature, then I'm going to have longer or eloquent prayers. Maybe not. Maybe our words become fewer because we know this person and we can get to the heart of the matter. It's a crazy thought. It's a crazy thought that Jesus himself had in Matthew when he said, whenever you are praying, don't say meaningless things. Don't just keep repeating requests. Don't just keep talking more and more like the who? Unbelievers do, because they think they will be heard. Why do unbelievers think that God will hear them? Because why? Because why? Being so wordy. When we think that the more we ask God for something, the more God will hear us, we're acting like unbelievers, Jesus says, because it's like we don't really know who God is. We have this image that perhaps he's an angry father or an absent parent who's like, I don't want you to enjoy life. I don't want to give you things, but we keep pestering him. Can we go to Disneyland? No. Can we go to Disneyland? No. Can we go to Disneyland? And we keep saying it, and finally God goes, okay, fine. That's our image of God. That's an unbelieving image of God. What do we do instead? Solomon says, verse 5, it's better that you should not vow than you should vow and not pay. Let not your mouth lead you into sin. Do not say before the messenger, it was a mistake. Oh, I didn't actually mean that when I promised it. God, you were there. I was under pressure. Why should God be angry at your voice? Don't get him angry at that mistake. Destroy the work of your hands. I think Solomon's telling us, look, don't bargain with God. Don't make a lot of promises. There are some promises we should make in life. I made a promise to God when I stood at an altar with my wife. I don't think there's a problem with making promises. But Solomon says, if you do, really think about what you're saying. Don't be hasty to make promises and vows to him. Solomon would know this firsthand, right? Because as we've seen, this is a man who made a vow to a woman and then broke it hundreds of times over his life. This is a man who made a vow to God, I'll be a king like you want, I will not amass a fortune, and the first thing he did was go out and get wealthy. I think when we start to make promises to God, what we're really trying to do is we're setting the parameters of the deal. All right, God, let's see, here's what I'm going to offer. I'll put this down on the table, I'm going to write it down, I'm going to slide it across to you, and then I want you to come back and we can work this thing out. Here's the problem, though, every single time you look in the Bible at the covenants, the promises, the contracts God has made with his people, it's not a bargaining thing. It's always one-sided. God says, all right, here's the deal. I'm going to do this, and then you will do this. This is the deal. There's no bargaining there. If we think that the more moral I am, the more disciplined I am, the better I live, then the more likely I'm going to get God to do what I want, what's our true motivation there? It's gaining leverage. We're not fearing God anymore. We're putting our trust in our own ability to keep our promises. And that can be dangerous because Solomon says, hey, you can't always control the promises that you make. For when dreams increase and words grow many, there is vapor, but God is the one you must fear. Solomon says, sometimes we don't think about what we're saying when we make rash and hasty promises. And that's like a dream. He says, you're dreaming if you think you're going to keep that. I remember a time that my family was involved in a heavy lawsuit over just some things that had happened. And my stepfather, it was a good deal, but he said, you know, the court date is like a week away. I'm going to fast until the court date. And I'm going to fast and pray until the court date. Guess what happened? Court date got moved to a month. My stepdad is like, well, what do I do? And to his credit, he honored that. He went like 30 days without really eating, and he drank water and all that stuff, fasting and stuff, whatever. But there was a kind of a thought there that, wow, I made a promise and I can't always control the outcome here. And he was a faithful person to that. But I think Solomon would say, that's why you got to be careful about making promises to God. Here's the deal. When we bargain with God, it reveals we don't really know him. Jesus said, we're acting like unbelievers. Acts tells us this: God is not served by human hands as though he needed anything, since he himself gives to all mankind life and breath and everything. We're coming to the bargaining table saying, all right, God, here's what I have to offer. And God's like, that's all my stuff. It's like when your kids go get a piece of clothing or something out of your drawer and they wrap it up and they give it to you and you're like, yay, my tie that I bought. Thank you. What if prayer is not a negotiation? What if it is a submission? What if prayer is Jesus saying in the garden, not my will, yours be done. I submit to it. We don't have the chips to play poker with the Almighty. So Solomon is saying, be very careful. Don't make empty prayers. Don't make promises to try to control God. Don't vow to God unless you've really guarded your steps and your words and you intend to keep them. The second temptation, when we're tempted to trust our rulers over God's rule, it'd be good for us to remember something that Solomon's father taught him. The kings of the earth, here's what they do. They set themselves, rulers take counsel together against the Lord, against his anointed. That's what all the rulers of the earth do. What does God who sits in the heaven, what does he do? He laughs. Isn't that funny? I think that's one of the funniest lines in all of Scripture. All the kings are down there with their power and their robes and authority, and we all love to wield this power, and God just is like, I want to encourage you with this. Please be political people. You need to vote in elections. You need to march for what is right. You need to protest what is wrong. You need to study the issues, debate important truths. You need to post online. Don't post online. The lowest form of political discourse ever invented in the history since God created the earth is called social media. So don't do that. But the other things, be political to the glory of God, but please remember that our Savior's last name is not Trump. It's not Clinton. It's not whatever person might be in the fray. And don't be amazed when the leaders we put our hope in have failed to deliver what we wanted. Instead, we put our trust in the one who laughs over the kings of the earth. And just because the wrong person gets elected, that doesn't mean that God falls off his throne. By the way, the wrong person's going to get elected in 2016. I have faith in that. Who's going to get elected? The wrong person? What's his name? Wrong person. Doesn't matter who it is. By the way, that's why when you see a leader who really leads the way God's called her to lead, she stands out and you go, wow. Solomon says, it's a gain for the land in every way to see this, a king committed to cultivating fields. If you are lucky enough, blessed enough to have a boss or a leader or a parent or a CEO who's committed to the cultivation of the people in the land, then rejoice. That is a gain in every way. But if you don't have that, don't be amazed, because people have sin and we fall. Finally, when we're tempted to trust what's in our hands more than what's in God's hands, what do we do? All the money in the world's not going to protect us. So we do invest, and we are wise with our money, but at the end of the time, we don't have the times in our hands. What do? Let's end where Solomon ends. Behold, here's what I've seen. This is good and fitting. Eat, drink, find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, in the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. Again, this is Solomon saying we cannot control the times. We can choose what? Our response. We can accept that our days are in God's hands. We can accept that our lot is under his hands, and we can enjoy God in the life he's given us. Now, how do we do this, though? Solomon actually gives us the answer in the very next verse. How do we trust that? He says, verse 19, everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them. Do you see that phrase? Power to enjoy them. Say that with me. Power to enjoy them. And to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, This is the gift of God. So here's the secret of this whole section of Ecclesiastes right here. It's not just accepting that the days we have to live are a gift from God. It's not just embracing the lot that we have in life as a gift of God. It's understanding that the power to enjoy life is a gift from God. And that we trust God, and it doesn't always change the times, but it can help us endure them. And in fact, Solomon says, you might even be able to enjoy them. Let me give you an example of that. One of my heroes for decades has been a man named Tim Hansel. Tim Hansel founded Summit Expedition. I did a lot of outdoor stuff as part of my studies, and this was kind of the guru. Summit Expeditions was a Christian-based organization where it was one of the first ones to go out into the wilderness and really begin to take advantage of that. He loved being outdoors because he believed outdoors is where men and women's souls were crafted to be servants. One day, Tim was mountain climbing. Something slipped, and he fell like 20 or 35 feet into this ice crevasse. Now, he was able to get up and walk, and he was just a little bit sore, and he walked away from that fall, but discovered the next day or two that he had cracked several vertebrae and blown several discs in his back. He had bone shards of vertebrae that were loose in his neck. For the next 35 years of his life until the day that he died, he lived with daily, constant pain. This pain robbed this man of his ability to be outside doing what he loved. It robbed him of some relationships. Sadly, he had broken relationships with some friends and even his own wife. He lost his dreams. This was not how his life was supposed to be. Now, many people in this situation would just say, I curse God and his times. I'm going to get a restraining order. But Tim began a journey with God to discover, could I still have joy even though the times aren't the way I want? He wrote a book called You Gotta Keep Dancing. In the book, he declared this. He said, you can choose joy. Life can be tough. Stress, disappointment, heartache, hurt are all part of the human condition, Ecclesiastes 3. But while pain is unavoidable, misery is optional. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. See that? See, Tim couldn't choose his times. He couldn't control that. He could choose his response. His response was, I choose to find joy in the hand of God and my toil under the sun. Now, that might be hard for you to believe in the situation you're in today. Maybe you're in something where you're facing something and you think, I don't know how to do this. One last verse with Solomon. Here is the promise that Solomon has put his hope in. For he, this person who is enjoying life and trusting God, will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. See, we tend to focus on the outcome of the times. If that time changed, I'd be happy. If this happened, then I'd be satisfied. And so what we end up doing is we seek God. God, give me that. Give me this. But what we neglect to do sometimes is go to God and say, would you give me the ability to enjoy where I am? I'd like to submit to you that the ability to enjoy the times is more powerful than having the ability to control the times. Solomon says, if each day we choose to trust God, God is able to keep us occupied with joy. That means we don't count the number of days we have. It's not about how long we have or how long we don't. It's not about focusing on the times that we can control and the times we can't. It is about saying that there's some kind of peace in our life, passes our understanding. We're in the middle of horrible things. We are occupied with joy. Let me offer you this word from John Piper. Occasionally, weep deeply over the life you hoped would be. Grieve the losses. Then wash your face, trust God, and embrace the life you have. I asked Kevin to close us with a song, close this message with a song today. It's a song that has given me hope for several decades, and I've been waiting for 2 decades to share it with you. And here it is, finally. I pray that you would listen to this. Don't try to sing it. Let your words be few. Let's draw near to listen and see if God has a voice behind these words for us this morning.
You say you see no hope. You say you see no reason we should dream the world would ever change. You're saying love is foolish to believe, 'cause there'd always be some crazy with an army or a knife to wake you from your daydream and put the fear back in your life. Someone wrote a play just to glorify what's stronger than aim. They'd not arrange the stage to look as if the hero came too late. He's almost in defeat. It's looking like the evil side will win. So on the edge of every scene, from the moment that the whole thing begins, it is love who makes the mortar. It's love who stacked these stones. And it's love who made the stage shift, though it looks like we're alone. And in this scene set in the shadows, the night is here to stay. There is evil cast around us, but it's love that wrote the play. For in this darkness, love can show the way. Now the stage is set. You feel your own heart beating in your chest. This life's not over yet. So we get up on our feet and do our best. We play against the fear. We play against the reason not to try. We're playing for the tears. We're burning in the happy angel's eyes. Well, it's love that makes the mortar. Love stacked these stones, and it's love who made the stage. Though it looks like we're alone, and in this scene cast in the shadow, the night is here to stay. There is evil cast around us, but it's love that wrote the play. For in this darkness, love can show.
Why is the play of my life coming out this way? I honestly have no idea. But I would agree with Solomon. The only way in an unstable world to endure and to even have a hope at enjoying the play is to take and trust the hand of God above the sun. Let's do that in prayer right now. God, I sense there's something in each of our lives that is a point of issue between us and you. It's sitting on the bargaining table between us. I'm just going to pray this metaphor, Lord. I just pray that you reach your hand over that thing and allow us to take your hand today to trust your heart, your plans, your character, and believe that you have the power not only to change our times, but if you choose not to, you have the power to keep our hearts occupied with joy. We choose that today in Christ. Amen.